Hey there, it's Monica Metz. Welcome to our weekly live chat. We have so many fun things to cover today. We are talking about how to get iron from plant foods. We are talking about GMOs, and we are also talking about collagen supplements. Okay, so if you are joining me live, let me know in the comments. I would love to hear from you. I have my handy dandy little notes here that I'll be looking at from time to time. Melanie, hello. I hope you are having a great week so far. Thank you so much for joining me live today. Okay, let's see. Lesson or question one. So every so often I send out polls and surveys, and this question came to me from someone through Instagram, and she wrote, what foods do you recommend to help with iron deficiency during the menstrual cycle? So I will be the first to say iron deficiency is not my specialty. And if this person is, or if you are dealing with iron deficiency and have been dealing with it over a long period of time, I highly recommend working with a plant-based dietitian, so an RD, in other words. And the reason I say a plant-based dietitian, or at least somebody who is open to someone being plant-based, is because I know someone who is dealing with this very issue, and she was a committed vegetarian for, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And then the next thing you know, excuse me, the dietitian is telling her, well, your iron is so low, you just need to start eating red meat. And, you know, I just feel like that was not super helpful to someone who is a committed vegetarian. And so there are lots of plant-based dietitians, and there are more being certified or licensed each year. And so I think that if you are committed to eating more vegetables, or you want to stay plant-based for a variety of reasons, then I think it's important to get that expertise from someone who is looking at all the options and who doesn't just go for the easiest one, which is like, well, you just should start eating beef again, right? So anyway, Paul, hello, I'm happy you're here too. I just saw that. Okay, so, but let's kind of dive into iron-based or iron-rich foods. Also to this person, I would say it's important to eat iron-rich foods consistently, not just during the menstrual cycle, because that, you know, it's not like the body, it just doesn't work like that necessarily, like short-term like that. Oh, the body says, oh gosh, we have some iron-rich foods during our cycle. Thank God, like we're gonna be fine. No, I think it would be important for someone who runs low to just keep a constant stream of those iron-rich plant foods to help support the body. Okay, so here's the deal. You've probably, if you've investigated this at all, you understand that there are two kinds of iron. There's heme iron, H-E-M-E, which comes from meat. And then there's non-heme iron, which comes from plants. And it's true that heme iron that comes, you know, from red meat and animal products, it is more easy, or it's easier to absorb in the body than non-heme iron. However, that doesn't mean that people are going to be plant-based or eating more plant-based. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to become anemic because they don't have this heme iron. But it's important to mention, because you'll find that out if you start doing this research. But I thought it was really important to talk about this. And this comes from Matt Resigno, who is a plant-based dietitian. He's also the author of Plant-Based Sports Nutrition. And so he wrote this on the blog for No Meat Athlete, which is a great resource if you have time to check that out. He wrote that it's true, vegetarians and vegans may have lower iron stores, so our storage of iron in our bodies, than omnivores, people who eat meat, chicken, fish. While vegetarians have lower stores of iron than omnivores, they do not have higher rates of anemia. In the research, many vegetarian stores are, quote, low normal, but this does not mean less than ideal. Actually, there's some evidence that says low normal iron stores are beneficial, improved insulin function, and lower rates of heart disease and cancer. I thought that was super interesting. I thought that would be helpful for you all to know. So let's just get down to brass tacks though and talk about the foods that would actually support you in your desire to bring more iron-rich foods into your diet. So whole intact grains such as quinoa and oatmeal, that's going to be a great resource for you. Whole wheat breads and cereals and pastas, avocado, And then really the place where I like to start with people is beans and greens. When people ask me just on the street or in my social life, like, hey, I have low iron, like, what should I be doing? I'm like, beans and greens, baby, beans and greens. So beans, legumes, soybeans, tofu, lentils, any of those will do. And then the greens, cooked spinach, cooked kale, collard greens, you know what your leafy greens are, but that combination of beans and greens will be very powerful for you. Also cooked mushrooms, baked potato, nuts and seeds, especially cashews, chia, hemp seed, pumpkin seeds, and then dried apricots and figs is another iron-rich food that people turn to when they're trying to get their iron from plant-based foods. Now, another thing that's really important to realize is that it's good to combine these naturally iron-rich foods with a source of vitamin C, because that will help it make it will help it be more accessible to the body, bioavailable. So let's think, for example, citrus fruits, orange juice, grapefruits, things like that. Chard, high in vitamin C, who knew? Broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. This one always surprises me, or I've known this for a while, but when I talk to people, it surprises them. Those vegetables are high in vitamin C. Your bell peppers, so your red, green, yellow, orange, that's another great one. That's a fun one to introduce into your palette of colored vegetables. And then the fruits, kiwi, strawberries, tomatoes, cantaloupe, and papaya. So if you are eating an iron-rich meal, then you're definitely going to want to incorporate some of these vitamin C foods into that meal. So I think about if you're doing a stir fry and you have some kale in there, then you're going to want to have some red peppers in there. That's kind of the most obvious to me. So just remember that when you're eating, when you're focusing on those iron-rich foods, you want to get those vitamin C foods in the same meal. And then related to that, a lot of people don't realize that coffee and tea can actually inhibit our absorption of that iron. So if you're eating a meal, don't have coffee or tea with that meal. Maybe have it separately. But also if you drink a lot, like if people tell you like, wow, I can't believe how much coffee you drink, maybe you should take a look at that as well, because it's probably not serving you in terms of iron absorption. And then last but not least, you could try cooking with a cast iron skillet, because anything that gets cooked in that skillet, it's going to absorb some of that iron from the skillet, and that will, voila, be in your food. So that's another way that you can try to get some more iron into your diet. But ultimately, I would say if you've been struggling with kind of chronic or persistent low iron levels, then definitely you want to work with a plant-based dietitian / RD, or otherwise known as an RD, or someone who is at least skilled and open to finding creative solutions for someone who wants to eat a more plant-based diet. Because, like I said, their first answer is going to be like, hey, why don't you just start eating meat? Well, a lot of people don't want to do that for other reasons. You know, meat comes with some baggage. Maybe you have heart disease in your family. Maybe you struggle with high cholesterol. Maybe you ethically don't want to eat meat. So that's why it's really more helpful when you're working with a dietitian who is considering all those factors and helping you be more creative. Okay, so that is question one. Question two, someone also from Instagram asked me, could you go into GMO products and when to avoid them? So this is a really big one. I feel like there could be a 2 or 3 hour documentary on GMOs alone, and I am by no means an expert on GMO genetically modified organisms. However, we can definitely talk about GMO foods. That's what I'm comfortable talking about. So let's do that. So let's actually talk about a genetically modified organism and why all the controversy. There's just a wide spectrum of reactions to the introduction of GMOs into our food supply. And some people think they're the worst thing ever, and it's going to be like the end of civilization if we're all eating this food. And then there's the other end of the spectrum. People think they're 100% safe. So obviously a very polarizing component of our food supply. I err on the side of, I don't want to be anyone's guinea pig, bottom line. So the truth is too, like, we don't know the long-term effects of having GMOs in the food supply. They haven't been around as long, like, we don't have any long-term studies about it. So, like, who knows? But there are a lot of people wondering about it and feeling like it's dangerous enough that, hey, maybe we should slow our roll on that. Maybe we should not eat that stuff until we know exactly what we're up against. So, I'm one of those people. I like to keep it clean that way. You may disagree with me, but the person who was asking this was worried about it. So, we're going to talk about the different foods that we should be avoiding. Okay, so a good resource, by the way, is to look up the Non-GMO Project. And you, let's see, this one's probably a better, you have probably seen their logo on foods that you buy. This is a container of soy milk. So the Non-GMO Project would be a really great resource for you to check out if you're curious about this. So anyway, a GMO is, in my mind, I mean, the kind of bottom line, it's kind of like a Frankenfood, like Frankenstein, because they might take a tomato plant. This is kind of the famous example is if scientists have a tomato plant and they want to make it, let's say, more resistant to pests, they may find something genetically in a frog or a fish that, when spliced together, or when that organism, when that tomato plant is genetically modified with some of that gene from the frog, maybe that tomato plant becomes less or becomes more resistant to pests. So it sounds weird, like it sounds like a science fiction movie or, you know, or book. And so that's why, you know, people have like this visceral reaction to it, like, why would I want to have a tomato that has fish genes in it or frog genes? And so that's really kind of the classic example is that they are organisms that do not occur in nature. A tomato would never mate with a fish. It just would never happen. And so that's why it's so polarizing. So another example when I was doing my research is I didn't realize they were doing this with farmed fish. I knew that they were doing this with chickens, but they can genetically modify a salmon so that instead of it taking 3 years to come to market, they can make that fish grow. Like they can make it produce growth hormone all the time and at an accelerated rate so that now that fish is ready for market in 18 months versus 3 years. So it's all about money and trying to get that fish to market sooner, which you know, the motive on that like is not the best. I get it. I mean, it's a business, but if you think about it in terms in those kind of terms, you know, maybe it doesn't sit that well with you. It certainly doesn't sit that well with me. So the concern though, generally speaking, people worry about the long-term effects of eating GMOs. They worry about, is this going to bring a whole new level of allergic responses to these foods that just don't even exist in nature, or worse, other diseases. And that's really what the primary concern is. That's what the uproar is about GMOs. So, if you want to avoid these foods, today approximately 90% of corn, soy, and sugar beets are on the market are GMOs. And so, the T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies, which is the program that I got my certificate in plant-based nutrition from, says this is so it's most evident in the processed food industry in which up to three-fourths of all foods contain GMOs. So I'm talking about a lot of breakfast cereals. This really opened up my eyes when I was doing my certification, was that there were some cereals on there on this list of GMO foods, you know, being in the ingredients that it really surprised me. And it really made me take a closer look at what I was buying for my family and we went from there because I thought, well, I don't really, these seemingly innocuous or somewhat natural cereals, I thought, you know, I don't really want to be exposing my family to that day in and day out. So that really changed my behavior. But a lot of those breakfast cereals, crackers, chips and snacks, a lot of that is going to have GMO product in it. So also high-risk foods in terms of crops, alfalfa, canola, so think canola oil, cotton, papaya, zucchini, that kind of surprised me, zucchini and summer squash. And then actually one of my favorite greens, which is radicchio. So when I found that out, that, I mean, it's so obscure to me. Like, where's all the money in GMO radicchio? But anyway, that changed my buying behavior. And so now if I can't find organic radicchio, I just don't buy it because it's not worth it to me. I'm trying to and like introduce fewer toxins to my body and to my family's diet. I don't really need to add more. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so you'll also want to be careful with animal products such as chicken, beef, fish, because a lot of the GMO food that is being raised in this country is actually being used as feed. And so that, if the animal is eating that feed, that GMO feed, then it becomes incorporated into their tissues, which is what people are eating. And so you just really want to be careful about that. So if you eat animal products, and if this is an important issue to you, definitely look for organically raised livestock or organically raised chicken, poultry, eggs, that sort of thing. Okay, so we talked about the non-GMO product or project. And what did they, I was doing my research on this. What did I want to tell you? Oh, this is the thing that I did not realize. So this is a quote from the non-GMO project's website. They said, though there are only several GM crops that are widely available, so that's like the alfalfa, the canola, et cetera, corn and soy, there are commodity crops that often get further processed into a variety of ingredients. These high-risk ingredients are typically present in packaged products. So if you're looking at a label and you see something like amino acids, alcohol, aspartame, what else? Citric acid, sodium citrate, ethanol, flavorings, natural and artificial, high fructose corn syrup, hydrolyzed vegetable protein, lactic acid, maltodextrins, MSG, sucrose, a lot of that, if you see that on the ingredients list, a lot of that could be GMO product or GMO ingredients. So that's just something, because if you just did a little bit of research and you saw that the main crops were like corn and soy and sugar beets and alfalfa, you might say to yourself, well, I don't have to worry about these packaged crackers that I get or whatever. So I just wanted to point out that it's probably prevalent in a lot of those processed foods that you might be eating. So something to look out for. But I would say to this person who asked me that question, if you're buying some processed foods that's not like a whole plant food, like fruits and vegetables, just try to look for the non-GMO, there you go, the non-GMO label. Because especially if you're going to be drinking soy milk or using tofu, soy's on that list of a lot of GMO product in this country is soy. So you just want to look for it. Here's a can of corn. It's on the can of corn. You can see that with the glare, but anyway, just look for that logo and you can rest assured. Okay, so that was question two. Question three is I'm curious about collagen supplements. Okay, so I'm just looking at Melly at your emoji. That's pretty funny. Okay, so question three, I'm curious about collagen supplements. And this came from my free private Facebook group, the Plant Powered Club. Highly recommend that you join if you're not a member already. But anyway, someone posted in there, she's like, hey, I'm curious. And so I, to me, I'm like, well, no wonder you're curious because it's marketed heavily. Like when I'm scrolling through Instagram or I'm looking online, I see a lot of marketing for collagen supplements. So in 2020, in the United States alone, consumers were projected to spend $293 million on collagen supplements just in 2020. So it's a massive industry, which, I'll admit, it makes me a little suspicious right off the bat. So the claims are, so I guess what I'm saying is anytime I see like a highly marketed supplement like that, it makes me a little suspicious. So you may not share that suspicion, but anyway, the claims are that consuming collagen helps you with beautiful skin, elasticity, addressing dryness, or addressing joint pain in your body, or helping you maintain or build lean muscle mass. So those are the claims. Those are the marketing claims. Now, the concerns are, does it work? How do we know? A lot of this is anecdotal from people. Well, I feel like it helped, but there aren't a ton of studies that it's really too early to say whether these collagen products are really helping anybody. The data is just not there yet. So does it work? Don't know. It can definitely be expensive. And so there are cheaper, less expensive ways to support our skin. And then there's product safety. So this is kind of the gross part of things, is that collagen, it's made from cow hooves and chicken and pig parts. And so how is that product being sourced by, the person who's manufacturing this collagen product that you want to buy? You don't know, is it super high quality? Was it organically raised non-GMO beef? Or beef that was not fed GMO feed? Like, who knows? And so that's kind of this melting pot of like, where does that product come from? It's kind of all the leftovers. It can be high in heavy metals and other contaminants. So that becomes, that becomes a little troublesome if you think about it. So that's why I'm actually more interested in vegan collagen, which is just starting to come onto the market. There actually have been a lot of vegan or vegan collagen boosting products to date, which actually don't have vegan collagen, but they have different nutrients and extracts to supposedly help support the skin in a way that a collagen supplement would. But there's actually a new product coming onto the market that is vegan collagen, that instead of being made from like cow hooves and stuff like that, it's being made from, I think, yeast. Let me look at my notes. Fermented yeast and bacteria. Sounds better to me than a product that comes from cow hooves. But also, like, this product isn't really widely available yet. So maybe something to look for in the future if you're really, really interested in a collagen product. But in the meantime, I would say just eat more of those collagen boosting foods to maybe like get the same effect. It's going to be a lower cost. It's something you can do right now. And the side benefit is that you're going to be healing and balancing your body through these foods, and it can help address a number of other concerns you have beyond just what your skin looks like. So you could, let's see, where's my little list here? Soy products. I'm a big fan, so my unsweetened, just plain old soy milk, tofu, tempeh, those are great for the skin. Beans, especially black beans, kidney beans, seeds, especially pumpkins, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, and chia, those can be all really great for the skin. And then nuts, pistachio, peanuts, and cashews, really nourishing for the skin. Now, Allison Tanis wrote a book, which I love, I highly recommend. She's the author of Feed Your Skin, Starve Your Wrinkles. What a great title for a book. She has many, many ideas for foods that can help support your skin. And this is just an example. She had a little chapter that was 18 foods that can tighten, smooth, and fight sag. So these are all, the claims of the collagen products. So wouldn't it just be easier if you were having asparagus, black-eyed peas, celery, dried fruit, chickpeas, dates, and mango? That sounds amazing to me. So anyway, if you want to check out her book, Allison Tanis, author of Feed Your Skin, Starve Your Wrinkles. Okay, so that's it. So for our live chat today, we talked about iron-rich foods, well, iron-rich plant foods that you can be incorporating into a plant-based or a plant-friendly or a plant-powered diet. We talked about GMOs. We talked a little bit kind of about what they are and why people are so concerned about them and which foods to avoid if you just don't want to have them in your diet. And then finally, we talked about collagen supplements and other things that you can be doing so to support skin health and vitality. So that is it. Are there any questions? We have a couple minutes before I do my next live. By the way, I'm going to hop off of this live and go over to Instagram and do another live at 1:45. So if you want to join me there, that would be awesome. And I'm at Mospo on Instagram. Oh, Paul Stern says watermelon in the seeds too. Yes, amazing for your skin. You probably still have watermelon where you live, Paul. And if you do, I'm envious because it is not watermelon season for us here in the Northwest. But I do love my watermelon when it comes around. I love it. Just plain. I blend it up in a smoothie. I make a great gazpacho out of it. It's so versatile and yummy and hydrating. So yeah, so that's about it. So what else can I tell you? Have you downloaded your How to Eat More Veggies starter kit? If you have not, it's totally free. It has all sorts of goodies in there, including some meal planning and prep resources, a sample grocery list, and some other things. It's totally free. It's a PDF. You can look at it on your iPad. You could download it and print it. You could go over to the Kinko's store and like have it bound if you wanted. I just think it's a really fun resource to have if you are trying to get more veggies and whole healthy plant foods onto your plate. So the way you can get that is at monicamets.com/starter kit. totally free. I highly recommend that you check it out. So, no, I'm guessing, Melanie says no. Maybe that was in answer to my question. Do you have questions? In the freezer, watermelon in the freezer? Maybe. Not sure what that's all about, Melanie. Maybe you can clarify. But anyway, so yeah, the people I mentioned, just to circle back, Matt Nusigno is a plant-based dietitian, Allison Tanis, and then what else? The Non-GMO Project. Great resources for you to check out. Okay, so that's about it. Oh, no watermelon. Got it. Sorry, Melanie. So not watermelon season for you anyway. You have it in the freezer. And I didn't do that this summer. I forgot. I did that last summer. I had a little stash and I put it in the freezer for myself so I could have a little watermelon slushy later on. But I forgot to do that this summer. A lot of other things going on, right? Okay, so anyway, that was our live chat for this week. Hey, Jan, thanks for joining me live. Good to see you here. And yeah, join me next week. And also, if you have a question you would like me to answer in a future live chat, just leave it in the comments on my page and I will add that to my list of things to address in the coming weeks. Okay, so get your starter kit, monicametz.com/starter kit. Okay. All right. I hope you have a great rest of the week. I hope you're getting lots of vegetables, fruits, beans, and legumes, and other healthy plant foods onto your plate. Feel free to browse my website, monicametz.com, for recipes, and I will talk to you soon. Have a great week.